Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Empathy Podcast. I'm Nelson Almanzar, and I have my co-host here on the other line, Holly Custard. And at the Empathy Podcast, we are creating awareness of how empathy can have a positive impact in every part of our lives. So what we do here is we bring on guests, experts, and professionals from very diverse backgrounds and fields. And we talk to them about how they apply empathy and how it has a positive impact in what they do and how they affect others in a positive way. So, Holly, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited to be here for our first podcast.
Yes, yes. And you're calling from Colorado, is that correct?
Yep, calling from beautiful Granby.
Oh, I'm sure it's wonderful here. I'm in Austin. It's nice and warm. That's the total understatement. It's hot here. So we have Dr. Mark Cunningham that we've interviewed. Holly, why don't you tell us a little bit about Dr. Cunningham?
Great. Yeah, Mark. You know, Mark is a passionate media scholar, first of all, who is crazy about all forms of film and television and literature and music. I swear he has an ability to memorize and deconstruct all things. He's reading everything all the time and watching and listening. And in addition to being an educator and instructor for over 17 years, Mark is also busy as an author and a screenplay writer and a television producer. Mark is really a thought leader in media studies. And as a result, he's frequently asked to speak about film and television and all types of diverse media-related topics. And for some listeners, you might be interested in hearing that Mark also consults and presents workshops, helping teach other educators how to use media effectively in the classroom. And in this episode, it was so fun talking with Mark because you really get to hear his passion and his energy, his love of being a media scholar. And in addition to his amazing ability to empathize with and connect with all of his students, despite age, and really making a lasting legacy for both himself and for his students. Really inspiring.
So he's really an effective teacher. He's one of those teachers that can really have a genuine connection with students despite the age and culture gaps, generation gaps. And he has this ability to connect with them and therefore have a more effective impact in their education. Great. I'm excited to share with everyone the interview with Dr. Mark Cunningham. We had recorded this previously, and we are just getting started with this empathy podcast. So you may notice some sound quality variation in sound quality. So bear with us. We will guarantee get much, much better at this stuff going forward. All right. So let's get right to it. The interview with Dr. Mark Cunningham.
So you're talking to high school students about this story, and it's about kind of having financial troubles, having mental health challenges, having marital issues. Yeah. There's all these
in the original text.
Hard issues to understand and to digest. And and so you're having the students kind of dissect this complex story through these different lenses. Can you describe in this particular case, what are your students like in that class? Where are they coming from? And how do you get them to relate to that story?
Well, initially, you know, they first get in my classroom, they see this reading list, and I'm like, oh, hell, I have to get the hell out of this class. Literally, that's what happens the first 2 weeks.
Intimidating.
Yeah, the first 2 weeks then when I was teaching English, the first 2 weeks, everybody tries to get out of my class. And then finally, they can't get out. A lot of them are like, oh, crap, I'm stuck with this. But then they get into it. They really, really get into it. And their insight is incredible because largely in my public school career, I have taught at Title I school. Title I meaning kids who are considered kind of like low socioeconomic, you know, disadvantaged in that respect. People think that means one thing, and it does mean that for some students, but not all of them. Right? But I love working with those. And the students that I largely work with are Black and Latino. And so for some of them, for many of them, right, they've never been introduced to anything like this. And so I'm teaching them this stuff, right? And they're like, they call me from college. We ran streetcar class. I was already ready. I took all my notes from high school to class. Good. You know, they ask me questions about their work. You know, and I've introduced them to things like they read John Patrick Shanley's play Doubt. They probably never would have read that with me. They read Ann Moody's Coming of Age in Mississippi. They read, gosh, what else did I teach? So much stuff I end up teaching these kids. But even in other instances where I've taught John Irving's The World According to Garp, I've taught that. I've taught, you know, Medea to students. I've taught you know, just a wide range of things that I've taught.
And they wouldn't have.
They wouldn't have probably been exposed to. I've taught Stephen King's and what Stand and with the Book of Revelation, which was really, really interesting. I consider myself pretty youthful. And it's not like I'm walking around here trying to, you know, be younger than what I am and all this other kind of stuff. But it's just a connection and the stuff that I'm able to do and the stuff that I'm interested in and the stuff that I like. And because my students, for example, know that I like some of the things. I have students that call me in from college and we talk about TV shows like Ronish and Blackish. And we talk about Queen Sugar and we talk about, you know, all Issa Rae's show Insecure. They call and we talk about that stuff, but being able to relate to them in that way and have that connection. And again, right, being able to pick literature that I can say, hey, you wouldn't read this, but I guarantee you, when I get through teaching it to you, you're going to be blown away by this. And they, most times, we have a few people that just don't want to do it, right? But my success rate really is pretty high because one of the things I tell you, I teach Stephen King's memoir on the craft of writing called On Writing. They hate that book. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh my God. But it is the book that they reference most.
So in the process of hating the book,
they get so much out of it, yeah.
But they appreciate it after.
They go, man, I'm glad we read that Stephen King book. I didn't like it at first when we were reading it, but man, I see what he means. So I have to I'm really, really careful, not to use, overuse adjectives and not use adverbs much and just really kind of make sure my writing says what it needs to say without having to over-explain stuff. And, you know, they tell me all of that, man. And it's like, yeah. And so it's just that knack of being able to connect with them. And I can't honestly, I couldn't pinpoint and tell you, well, this is how I do it. Mm-hmm. I'm just able to do it.
Well, so you mentioned being youthful yourself, and that's one of the keys to connecting with the students. And what would you say about you that makes you youthful?
Well, most of my students, right, don't think I look my age, so that helps. The youthfulness comes from the fact that I like a lot of the stuff that they like. Some stuff that they listen to, I don't like. But I give it a shot. Mm-hmm. I listen to it. I try. I listen to what they listen to. Some of it I really like, and some of it I say, y'all can take that with you. I don't like that.
So that goes a long way. Even the fact that you know what, let's say, Drake or Cardi B, which personally I don't really care for. I'm more of a 90s, early 2000s.
Okay.
But just the fact that you know of it and you're able to.
I know who Migos is, right? And I can sing along with some of that and know. And my kids look at my iPod or they look at what's on my music. Come here, what you know about that song? So get out my face. Yeah, I do know that. Well, look at them. You know, they're always really, really hype about the fact that they catch me listening.
Because you're able to speak at their level.
I can.
Even though you may not agree with it.
Right, I can speak. Yeah.
And that's a lot of the things that we want to share today are related to that. The fact that you, as somebody who's not necessarily part of their world, their social world, or in their position currently, but you take that extra effort into, okay, well, let's see what they're listening to so that I can leverage that to insert Stephen King.
Yeah, and it was crazy also, too. It's like my students actually hanging out with me. This is what's so funny, right? Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, the traditional thing is they graduate and, you know, you really don't see them much. Whatever. My last birthday, I turned 47 my last birthday. Oh. And my students, come here now. Four of my boys, come here now. We want to take you out to dinner for your birthday. No, we went to Chili's, right? But still. The fact that they wanted to hang with me on my birthday, I thought was really cool. So we went to eat, we sat there, and we laughed and talked, and then we walked down the street, and we went to see Girls Trip. Yeah, and two of us had seen it already, and the other two hadn't seen it. And now that's a running joke. That movie is a running joke between the four of us. And these boys, one of them is in college, FaceTimes me, and we talk for hours about, you know, TV shows, movies, and stuff that we like in common. And one of them, they all call me for advice. You know, I go to lunch with a lot of them. I have one who's like a daughter to me who I taught, she was in high school, not a while back, but it's been a while now, you know, and she's getting ready to get married. When her fiance proposed to her, she sends me the video of the proposal and we still talk. And I have lunch with my former students all the time from my first class I ever taught, fourth grade. One of the students in that class who I'm extremely close to, he's like a son to me, actually. He's 31 now. 30, 31 years old, and he is a chiropractor in the Bay in California.
So yeah, this is like a combination. So you're connecting with students because you love media and they love media, and you're willing to take risks in things that you don't know, just like you're asking them to take risks with things they don't know. So it sounds like you have an authenticity to yourself because you truly care about these kids as people.
Right.
And you're connecting with them through the media. And then you have this genuine kind of authentic relationship. Like you expect a lot of them and they deliver.
I mean, I tell people all the time, you know,
what do you mean they deliver?
They deliver. Like, my expectations of them are high and they need them. Mm-hmm. Like they deliver what I ask.
Quality of the paper.
The quality of the paper. Yeah. And they know, and they know how hard I am too. Like, I'd be like, what is this crap? Take that back. What am I supposed to do with that? You know, that's not what I asked you to do. And that's a running joke between all of my students now, for current and past. Like, they will send stuff like, you know, y'all know how, remember how Cunningham used to make us write on paper? Man, that's like a running joke, man.
What would be their expectation coming into the class, do you think? Like, before they know you, before they connect with you, what is their
expectation? Their expectation, first of all, is that they're not going to have to do as much reading as that they have to do.
That's one film and theater class.
Well, no, because my English class, like, they didn't expect to do as much reading or whatever else, they just didn't expect. They're like, man, you teach us like we're in college. Exactly. You said that's where you want to go. And they're like, well, I don't want to go to college. I said, good, but then you'll learn that responsibility and when to pay bills on time. That's what I tell you. I tell them stuff like that. Like, every answer they give me, I got to answer back for them. You know, and that's the kind of thing. And like, they know they can't get over on me and stuff. Like, I would have there were teachers at the school that had problems with tardies and stuff like that. Because they knew I expected them. But you know, and they don't want to hear my mouth.
So it sounds like it's been successful for you as an instructor, and Ali, you've been in that space of education. Mm-hmm. How could that apply to, let's say, a math teacher or a science, somebody who's not using media, but what would you say they can do to meet students at their level?
Well, you know, here's the thing, too, about using media in classes. And I'll say this. Most principals, most educators that look at media is like, you know, showing movies in class is like a no-no. It's like you're not teaching. It's like you're trying to, you know, you're slacking on your job and that kind of thing. And I never had that problem because I was like, it's the way that you use it in the classroom that matters, right? Yeah, if you're just sitting there showing movies back to back and the kids, you're not asking them any questions about it, they're not applying it to anything, then yeah, hell, you're just showing movies, right? But the first thing I would do is challenge educators, really, you know, get away from that kind of thinking. You know, like, this is how, like, I tell you, this is what I tell my college students about cell phones. I'm not of the mindset, right, that, you know, cell phones, put those away. I don't want to see them. But some professors are like that. Here's how I look at it. I embrace the technology because we live in an information age. This is where we are. And I tell my students all the time, hey, I tell my college students this. You guys are adults. Some of you guys have to work. Some of you guys have kids. If you got to send a quick text, send a quick text. You got to send a quick couple of texts. Send a quick couple of texts. You know, somebody might be asking you to bring some milk home. We're in class pretty late. Maybe that's why. I just don't want you to sit up there and have a long, full-fledged conversation while I'm teaching. That's how I was telling myself, I got an ego. I'm a Leo. I have an ego, so don't do this. Right? But that's my joke to them or whatever else. But I tell them, I say, if you have to step out of class for a little bit to take a call, step out and take a call. Fighting that stuff is ridiculous to me. Because this is the age in which we live. I even feel that way about my, you know, public school kids, whatever. I'm also of the mindset, like, I'm not one of those people too, like, oh man, boys shouldn't wear hats in class. Who gives a damn? Long as you brought my, have you got my assignment done? That's what I give a fuck about. You got my assignment done.
And that reminds me of Greg Watkins too, the research that he's done on kids in the classroom, because he was looking at the fact that kids would have all of this really interesting, engaging kind of learning outside of the classroom with their devices across the different, you know, disciplines. But then they come to the classroom and they have to power everything down, which makes them feel disconnected from the classroom, no matter which discipline it is. Yeah. And so being able to take that media into the classroom, no matter which discipline, seems...
Then they're not sneaking it, right?
Yeah,
they're
sneaking it's legitimate. It's like authentic. That, right?
And, you know, and as far as, like, utilizing, like, you know, a science teacher can use media in the classroom. If you're showing, you know, documentaries from PBS, right, about whatever your subject matter is, that's something... A math teacher can do the same thing. I mean, if you're teaching elementary school students, you know, if you're using Schoolhouse Rock, if you're using things that are on YouTube, if you're that stuff is available for you to use. That stuff enhances your teaching. And not only that, you got to deal with the fact, right, that you are teaching kids who cell phones, computers, technology is the life they know. Some of the students that we're teaching now have never known a life without a smartphone, right? Why are you fighting that?
Yeah.
Right? Media is a way to grasp students. Why are you fighting that? Movies, kids love movies. Kids like TV shows where they love Netflix, extreme stuff all the time. Why are you fighting that?
And it sounds like from the story, like the students who are coming back to you years later when they don't even have to talk to you anymore.
Right, exactly.
And they're coming back because they want to express what happened when they watched something that had an impact in their life. They want to share that with you because they know that you're going to appreciate it.
Right.
You're going to enjoy it with them. It's like, it's a connection.
And it's true because, I mean, that's happened to me in different ways. Like in one of my high school classes, I taught Ntozake Shange's choreo poem for colored girls who considered suicide when the rainbow isn't up. And then Tyler Perry, God bless, put the film version out for colored girls. And one of my students in that class, the one I'm going to tell you is like a daughter to me, we ended up going to see that movie together. Mm-hmm. And the conversation we had after was, she was like, he messed that up. That shouldn't happen. Blah, 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 blah. But she had the context of the book, right? It was not just us going to the movies together and her, oh, let's talk about what was in the film. Her conversation was, well, remember in the book when such and such and such and such happened? I don't think that was projected well in the film. So our conversation was different, right? Mm-hmm. Because she had that context. And then she could think critically about that text, right? And the fact is like, even now when she talks to me, her thinking about things is very, very critical, right? And I'm not going to say I'm the only person that influenced her, but I do think I am one of the people who first kind of introduced her to be able to do that, right? And now she does it just freely. And our conversations about TV shows and things now, I mean, she's very, very insightful. And her thoughts about them are very, very precise. And it's really interesting to have those conversations with.
I was thinking about project-based learning,
yes,
for example. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of trends in school to help kids instead of lecturing kids and kids listening to you, taking in information, spitting it back out for an exam. Project-based learning and the kind of learning you're talking about really engages them with whatever is at hand. So you might give them a problem to be solved and they have to go out and do their own investigation and work in teams and communication with each other and problem solving. Mm-hmm. Do you think that you can, through project-based learning or problem-based learning, is that similar to how you're approaching it in your class? Or do you think is this a trend that education is moving more towards empathizing with the students and meeting them where they are? Does it make a difference? Are you seeing it happen?
No, I'm not. I see the PBL happen. The project-based learning is happening a lot because that's the new buzzword. That's the new thing. Mm-hmm. So in education, I find, right, whatever the new buzz thing, everybody jumps on and tries to do it. But I'm not certain, right, that people always understand how to do it, right, and how to, you don't just say, oh, do this project and I'm going to sit back here and facilitate. It's not just that, right? Interestingly enough, right, my approach to teaching is what they say not to do. I am a lecturer, but I'm an entertaining lecturer. And so I don't let students slack. Like I go, my kids never know when I'm going to call on them. And I walk around the room and I'm in their face and I'm engaging with them in that way. And I'm cracking jokes and laughing. Everybody can't do that. And again, some of this stuff that I'm able to do in the classroom is innate. I just am able to do it. And you can't show people how to do it. Some people, it's just not their style. That's not their personality. It works for me.
But do we need empathy for kids to learn in school? Like, do we truly learn? We need empathy.
Well, see, and I think the empathy comes in, right, is the choices you make and what to teach. And here's the thing. No, let me rephrase that. Don't stop giving. Give them that dry text, as I call it, but mix it with something else. Like, take Streetcar and what I did with Blue Jasmine. Yeah, Streetcar is not a dry text, but it is older than what they're used to.
Mm-hmm.
Give them something that may not resonate, right? Show them how it resonates. Right? Give them a contemporary text and put that together and say, now you see, but they were in the Streetcar before that because it's the way you teach it. It's the way you gotta say stuff to them and teach things to them in their language and the way that they think about stuff. And because I might say, Blanche was tripping. Y'all know she was. I was like, okay, how was Blanche tripping? Because she was doing so and so and such and such and such and such.
Literally use the word tripping.
And let me tell you, here's something else that's not popular, and I probably shouldn't say this on here or whatever, but yeah, I'd be like, that's some bullshit. And they like, and my kids will say, that is some bullshit, because she shouldn't have done so, you know.
Yeah.
But they're engaged, yeah, right? Because you should hear them in the hallway, right? But they're engaged, right? Like, there's a scene, I remember when I was teaching my favorite novel. It's hard teaching your favorite book. But I was teaching Toni Morrison's novel, Beloved. And there's a scene where they forced the male slaves to fillet the slave owners, right? They forced them to do that as a means of humiliation and power and control. And they were like, one of the things they were like, oh, come get your breakfast or whatever. One of my students like, oh, that's not breakfast. That ain't breakfast. Yeah. So we ended up having this long discussion about like why that occurred and why that happened because she, you know, so it's funny. But, you know, you can do it right with the, it doesn't matter what text you do it with. Like I've taught Orson Welles' Citizen Kane to high school students. And I have had young students in that class, one girl sit back, go, oh, this is my movie right here. I like, shh, keep it down. And there's a scene, like, I don't know if you've ever seen Citizen Kane, where there's a scene in it where he basically tells his wife in front of his lover, right, that he's basically, I'm not going to quit seeing her, right? And so he gets real loud. Well, she goes, oh, no, you're going to cheat and you're going to get loud. Oh, no, no, I'm like, no. You know, but just the way
like relating to it.
She was relating to it in that way. And so when you see them doing that, as a teacher, right, I look at cues, I see, but I watch my students when they watch movies. I do that with my adult students at ACC. I watch them when they watch, and I watch what they get into, and I watch what they entertain by. I watch what they laugh at. And then I turn around and say, I notice all of y'all kind of cringed at that part. We're like, oh, yeah, it's a so-and-so and stuff. And it really just makes for a more engaging class. And you don't have to just pick stuff that they like. But I do believe, though, right, you do need to incorporate some things. You know, so like one thing I've done in with high school students is, so Kendrick Lamar, the rapper Kendrick Lamar, Pulitzer Kenny now, right? Mm. Kendrick Lamar has a song called Backseat Freestyle, his Good Kid, M.A.A.D. City album. And he says in the song, Martin had a dream, Kendrick had a dream. So what I did was, is I showed them Kendrick Lamar's Backseat Freestyle video, and then I showed them a clip from Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream. I showed a video and a clip from I Have a Dream, the speech of I Have a Dream. And I asked them, you know, Martin Luther King was in his kind of early 30s when he did that I Have a Dream speech. And then Kendrick, you know, is in his 20s. So what does a young man's dreams look like in Martin Luther King's era versus Kendrick Lamar's era?
So what are some things that they came up with?
And Kendrick's dream, they were looking at in terms of the video, right? Women with big booties bouncing, you know, all this. Martin Luther King kind of talking about equality, whatever else, and talking about being judged by the content of their character, not color of skin, stuff like that. I said, but I see what you're saying, but how do those things connect? And so I started asking them to think about that just because Kendrick's doesn't look like Martin's doesn't mean that they're not asking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of start talking about that and having that conversation. But pulling Kendrick in, right?
You're able to get their attention.
Get their attention.
You gain that equity into saying, hey, look at this. All right, now look at this.
And I showed them Martin stuff first. I showed them Martin first. I said, now look at Kendrick. They're like, oh, that's my baby. But they were paying attention to what Martin was saying too, right? And so
really, you showed Martin first?
Yeah, I showed them Martin first. I did that on purpose.
Why?
Because if I showed them Kendrick, they wouldn't pay attention to Martin.
Mm.
That's the thing. That's the trick, right? Because they would have been still talking about Bag Now. No, look at Martin first. Then we had a little bit of a discussion about what he's talking about. What is his perspective? What is he trying to get across? Who is this message for? Who is he talking to? You know, then I did the same thing with the Kendrick video. And then we meshed those things together. I'm talking about, like, how did that happen?
So how does that differ at ACC then? That's a community college. So you're teaching there. It's a mix of students, different ages, different races, different genders. So different from high school.
Right. Some ways.
How do you have, with your youthfulness?
Nah, it works there too.
Does it? So how's it different? Or how's it the same?
Because, I can be a little bit more free with the tongue with them. but it's on cracking the jokes and not really cracking jokes. Well, I mean, I'm cracking jokes, but some of it is very self-deprecating. I can kind of make fun of myself a little bit with them or whatever else.
We've established that you're great at public speaking and keeping people entertained for a two-hour lecture. But for professors and educators that don't have that strength, how would you advise them to connect with your students?
Man, you know, if you don't know, ask somebody. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid of that. You know, some people just don't know, right? We're moving into this period in terms of public ed in particular, right, where people aren't teaching very long. And so, you know, we have people who are like first, second, third, fourth year teachers, you know. So, you know, veterans are like 9-year teachers now, almost now, because people just aren't staying in the field. They don't stay. And it's very, school shootings and things aside, it's just difficult to stay in this field. It's difficult. But think about what it means to be a young person, right? And what would you want to sit and listen to? And what would you want to read? Can you, if you're not excited about it, they're not going to be excited about it. I always pick stuff I'm excited about. Because if I'm excited about it, then I can be sure, right, that I can share that with them, and I can gain a lot of, you know, I can get them that way, right? If I'm teaching them material, you know that I like,
and I'm
connected with, right? And then, right, to be able to find ways to take this material I'm excited about. Okay, now what else can I use to get them excited about, right? I'm the only Black professor in my department.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm the only one. A lot of these students have never had a Black professor. So I'm the first one they have. Now that comes with these challenges.
And maybe not a male teacher.
And I was going to say, from a public school standpoint, not a lot of male teachers. And certainly, you know, that's, and a Black male teacher that's not a coach, right?
Athletic coach.
Yeah, not an athletic coach, right? And I'm teaching English, right? What? You know, Black man teaching English? What the hell? You know, so that in itself is an anomaly. You know, that's weird. And being a Black professor comes with its own challenges too, right? You know, I have students who question me all the time, right? So especially my white male students question me a lot. And I have to come like, oh, wait a minute, who got the PhD in film, you know, whatever else. Mm-hmm. So that has that, they do have that exchange that happens too. But more important than that, what ends up happening is I show them films that are made by Black filmmakers that they've never seen, never even heard of.
Such as,
like I showed them this semester, the John Barry's movie Claudine with Diane Carroll from 1974, right, which they loved. Many of them hadn't seen Spike Lee's movie Crooklyn. I show them that, and they love that. I've taught Ava DuVernay's movie Middle of Nowhere, which students really just, that really resonated with a lot of my students and stuff. And then even that, outside of that, right, teaching them John Sayles' movie Lone Star, which has John Sayles, and my students commented about this, how reflective he is as a white male filmmaker, and he writes, and he makes these movies about various and very different cultures, and he speaks about them in ways that are just like some of the most resonant and some of the most deeply reflective. I've never seen anything. He's an incredible filmmaker. And Lone Star, right, having this perspective, right, takes place down in the valley in Texas, right? And you have, you know, Mexican-American characters that are not afterthoughts, right? That they have lives, and they're flesh and blood creations. And he's infused, even to the smallest part, have been infused with this kind of humanity, right, this dignity, right? Just to be able to show them things like that, right? To show them De Sica's Bicycle Thieves, right?
So beyond you being an anomaly as an instructor and then using all these films that people have never seen before, you're saying that there's something more important than
that?
Oh,
yeah, it is. I mean, because, look, okay, here's the thing, right? I had no Black students in my class this semester. The one I did have, he dropped. So my intro to cinema class. Did I have any in my – I didn't have any in my intro to RTF class. And me as a Black male film scholar, there are not that many of us. There are not that many Black film scholars. There are not a lot of us. So to be able to sit in these classes and have conversations with them about race and have conversations about gender, which people usually don't ask them.
Exactly.
Right. Within the context of the stories, within the context of talking about media. One of the questions I show in my intro to RTF class, I show for our discussion on the internet, I show David Fincher's movie, Social Network. And the question that I pose to them that they have to write about is, what does it mean that the technology that you're seeing, this technology that heavily influences our culture, has largely been created by white men? Well, the white males in my class, and here's the thing, right? I don't just let it slide. I say, now, I know if you're white male in the class, you're going like, what the fuck? I know you're saying that. I go ahead and address the elephant in the room.
Let
them know. I say, I know you're saying it, and I'm not saying you are responsible, but think about what we're looking at here. Think about it for a second. Who do you largely see? Who is Fincher showing us in this movie? And he's not doing that for nothing. Right. That's not for nothing, you know. And so we end up being able to have these conversations about it. Right.
So you
and
pulling them, you're empathizing there with the students who might be uncomfortable digesting a text that's new to them, talking about race maybe for the first time, acknowledging differences in racial experience. And you're empathizing with them and making a safe space
to talk about it. And address it in effect. Like, I know.
So it's working at so many levels.
Yeah.
That you're this anomaly Black male instructor with all white students, some female, some male.
Yeah.
And then talking Latino about this topic.
And then I think about my Latino students who a lot of times don't have any of their issues addressed. Mm-hmm. Right. So for me to show a movie like Lone Star in class and to talk about that and to talk about, you know, Iñárritu and to talk about Cuarón and to talk about, you know, Del Toro as filmmakers, or talk about Gregory Nava or somebody like that, to mention that to them and talk about, you know, El Norte and all this other stuff, right? And they're like,
Is it an awakening?
It is awakening because, you know, like a lot of my Latino students have no idea what I'm talking about. They're like, I've never seen that. And I'm going like, you need to see movies made by people who look like you. You do. And they, I say, I'm not saying that's all you need to see. I watch everything. You should watch everything. But you need to be aware of that. Even if you don't give a fuck about it, you still need to be aware. And I tell them that. And they're like, I didn't think about it like that.
Exactly.
And to give them that perspective, right? You know, and it's so funny, right? As a black male, something I have to, as a black professor, not black male, as a black professor, I have to think about. My mother even asked me, now you're not filling your syllabus like you're just full. You're not just showing all black movies, are you? My mother asked me that. I'm like, no, mom, I'm not doing that. I mix everything. She goes, okay, because I don't want to mess your job up because they over thinking you're just too black. You know, it's like, no, I'm not doing it. But we talk about those issues in class, and I do show them films by black filmmakers. And many of us have never seen that. Yeah, those are
important. It's an inclusion of all sides of all the stories.
Yeah, exactly.
And it makes their analysis richer in their own life. Right. Lived experience, seems like.
Yeah, it does.
Is it true? One of the things you mentioned in a different conversation that you and I had too, you talked about, in the high school level, you're relating with the kids with kind of music that they like, and kind of movies and foods and, you know, that kind of thing. And at the community college, you were talking about your experience working with adult students who have different kinds of challenges or interests. And I'm trying to remember, there was a gentleman maybe that you had talked to was having some challenges, and you're a comedy challenges.
Yes, I had a student who was struggling. I had been, you know, tried to start college a few times and it just wasn't happening for him. And I think a lot of it had to do with just kind of like some kind of personal health issues he was having, you know, mental kind of health issues he was having. But he was an incredible student. I mean, made the, you know, tied for the highest grade on my midterm. And he, you know, would write these posts about these movies that were just eloquent and just really nicely done and showed a lot of thought. And he would stress over it. And I would tell him, like, you don't really need to be stressing over it. You're much better at this than you think you are. And then he had these moments where he was coming to class, never missing class. And then all of a sudden, he started missing days. And so I pulled him, he came back and we talked after class. And I told him, I said, nobody drops a class they have an A. Nobody does. You know, so
it requires a different kind of empathy, right?
It's completely different because this guy, to be honest with you, if he doesn't come to class, oh well. But to me, I was like, because I was like, this dude's put too much work in to be just throwing this away, right? And then he stopped coming again, and I wrote him a long email and said, look, I usually don't do this, but I want to see you finish the semester. I want to see you've done too well. You can still make an A in the class. And 3 days later, he dropped the class.
Wow.
And I haven't heard from him since. And I probably won't hear from him. But, you know,
this
just happened. And, you know, but there are a lot of professors out there that go, oh, don't give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have students, I had another student this semester too that had some kind of personal problems too. He didn't show up for the midterm, or whatever else. He came and talked to me almost in tears or whatever else. And, you know, when people bullshit, you know, right? But I'm going like, okay, look, you know, my thing is this, as a teacher, and whether I do this as an educator, period, and if I do this, when I do this with my high school students, and I do this with my college students, I don't like being a hard ass just for the sake of being a hard ass, just because I can.
Mm-hmm.
As a professor, I can be a hard ass. Nope, I ain't going to do it. No, I'm not going to.
It's because you care.
And look, shit happens, man.
People read through that. They can sense it in any kind of engagement, whether it's business or relationship. They can see, like, if you're there being present and you care about the issue at hand.
That's true. Because, Nelson, there's something else, and this is how I put things in perspective for myself. You know, yeah, I have a PhD. I have a master's degree. And I have all this stuff. And you know what I pretty much say about that? Who gives a shit? That's really how I look at who gives a shit that I have a PhD. The reward has to be that fact that I'm still talking to students that I've taught decades ago. That has to be the reward.
And that they're living your teachings.
Exactly. Right. And they're still influenced by the movies that I've shown them and the books that I've introduced them to.
Oh my God, Nelson. I want to take a class with Mark. I'm going to sign up for film history at Austin Community College.
Yeah, he definitely reminded me of those few teachers that you were able to connect with and just really enjoy their class, not just learn the subject matter, but just actually enjoy it and you want to be there.
Yeah, you can tell he's so passionate and he's having fun with it. So the students are having fun with it. And his compassion is like, it just causes this, I don't know, this commitment of the students to him and from mm-hmm. him to the students, this amazing relationship that he's able to build.
Yeah. And that comes with a genuine desire to, or a genuine passion for the subject matter and, mm-hmm. and the want to get through to students. And it's hard to find with many teachers. And I think his students are very lucky to have him. Also, yeah. one thing that stood out was he's very innovative in being able to mix contemporary media, contemporary content and subject matters with his lesson plans. What was that example he gave with?
With Kendrick Lamar and Martin Luther
yes.
King? Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's a great example of, you know, that's taking older material, older topics, which students can be like, okay, history and all this and roll their eyes. But when you quickly mix it in with something they already know about and are doing, their ears perk up and they're ready to absorb mm-hmm. the information if you're yeah. able to make that connection.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, creating that kind of contemporary connection for the students, like, you know, Mark had mentioned that he, you know, to empathize and connect with the students, he really understands. Not only does he deeply understand the historical and contemporary texts of all media, but he understands where the students' interests are and he understands the way that they speak to each other. He really connects to them because he's presenting his authentic self and connecting and communicating in a way that makes sense to them. And like he said, you know, that he's a youthful person. And I think from what I hear, that youthfulness comes from his ability to stay fresh with what's going on in media today and with students and where students are. But he also understands the value to the students' intellectual growth, you know, to take these texts, these diverse mm-hmm. texts that are, gosh, they're covering a lot of difficult topics to understand, to communicate about. And it was so fun hearing all of the stories about the students that are coming back to have conversations with him because they know that he cares and he's going to be just as excited about deconstructing a movie or a song or a television series. They want to come back to him, you know, 10, 15 years after they've taken his class to share that excitement. And they're met with the same kind of, you know, passion and critical thinking that they learned in their class. It's just a legacy. It's just awesome.
Yeah. Well, they're absolutely lucky to have him as an instructor. So how can people get in touch with Dr. Mark Cunningham?
Yes. Well, he's got several creative social sites that you can get to him. Maybe you can, you know, can connect with him or you can even maybe learn from him. To find him, you can go to his website, which is www.markdham.com. He's also on Twitter at Monsieur Hambon and on Instagram with Dr. Ham, DocTaHam. And we're going to have these details on our website at empathypodcast.com as well.
Okay, yes. Our new website, empathypodcast.com. You can also check out other episodes on that website. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple iTunes, on Google Podcasts, Anchor Podcasts, and I think a few others, but you can find us there. And if you'd like to email us, hello@empathypodcast.com. Reach out to us and let us know what you think of this, what we're trying to do here. All right, Holly, I think this was great. We want to thank Mark for taking his time to speak with us and share his story. It was great having him.
Yeah, it was a great experience talking to him.
All right.
Until next time.
Yeah, next time. We'll talk soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.